Hey, I'm Michael.
And I'm Greg.
And we're two new dads and the co-founders of a company called Lalo and your hosts of the Dad Pod, where we talk with cool dads doing cool stuff so we can learn a thing or two. We're really excited to be joined by our friend Woody Hambrecht on the podcast today. Woody's dad to Sophie and the co-founder and co-CEO of House, an alcohol brand that's putting a modern spin on the aperitif. Of course, we have a drink in hand, and we're going to talk to Woody about what it's like being married to your co-founder and raising a toddler together while running a growing company during quarantine. Oh, and of course, Woody tells us about the epic OkCupid story. So we're supposed to head to Florida in late March, and it's going to be Gemma's first flight. I know you just did this. Any good tips? How'd you guys make it through?
I don't know if I'm the guy to go to for tips. I mean, it's not the greatest experience. It definitely depends on your kid. I mean, Jace cannot sit still. So, and he's not the type to like sleep in a stroller or...
Same with Gemma.
Oh, you're fucked. you're so screwed. I mean, like I was actively, you know, we don't do screens with my son yet, but I was actively trying to get him to watch the TV on the plane and he couldn't even do it. Like it was the one time I'm like, stare at this thing and just fucking look at it. Just look at it.
Yeah.
And the entire time he just wanted to eat the screen.
Yeah. I mean, she just turned one, so she'll be 14-ish months. So, you know, she's starting to obviously understand things and react. And
does she watch any shows?
You know, she's only seen like Our Planet, like real life animal stuff, but her attention span for it is like 30 seconds.
Yeah.
Or she'll eat it. It's not good. So I don't know if an iPad or a screen will do it.
You need
I think we're gonna try.
Yeah, you have the keys, and this is where we made a mistake. You need a tool chest. You need a very large tool chest full of stuff that you have at your disposal.
Yeah, the thing is, the thing she likes most is musical instruments. Like her drum and her like tambourine, her maracas.
That's perfect. Are you going to buy noise canceling headphones for everyone around you?
Yeah, the entire plane.
Yeah.
AirPod Max for you and AirPod Max for you. I'm just bringing Oprah on my flight.
You know that George Clooney did that on a commercial flight.
Really?
Yes. They brought their two twins who were infants at the time, and everyone in first class got noise canceling Bose headphones.
Just so, first class, though?
I think just first class.
Come on, George. Step up your game.
I know.
I might have to one-up him.
Literally last night, I was a friend of mine. I went to Florida too. And a friend of mine texted me. He was like, how was Florida? And I was like, Florida was good. Flying with my son was terrible. And he said, it makes you never want to go anywhere ever again. And I was like, yes. But like once you're there, it's good. How long are you going for? I think that's like
we're gonna be there for 10 days. So it's not like we're getting off the plane and back on the plane.
That's the key. You gotta like build up the confidence to go back on the plane and do it all over
again. Did you have any nasty neighbors on the flight? I mean, flying during COVID is already a thing.
Yes.
And then
we did. The people in front, I mean, listen, my son, Jace. You know, he was smacking the tray and hitting the seat. So like he wasn't the best. And like we were doing everything we could to try to get him to stop. But you know, at the end of the day, this lady, she kept giving us dirty looks. But she was wearing a baby carrier with a dog in it. So
can't trust her.
I couldn't trust her, nor could I take the criticism. But it's funny being one of those people for the first time. I mean, I've definitely been on the plane and I'm just like, that baby needs to shut up right now. Right now. And for the first time, like you are the person with the baby and you have so much sympathy for everyone else. Like it's crazy how your perspective can shift so quickly.
Yeah. I'm not looking forward to it. Did you buy Jace's own seat
or did
you lap him?
We bought, you have to buy their own seat.
Yeah.
If your kid is squirming, like we even buckled him in at one point to try to just like have him stay still. But I mean, I think it also depends what airline you're flying right now. Yeah. I think it's a big...
We're going Delta. Oh, I think we did the row.
Yeah, well, they don't book the middle seats right now.
Classic. Yeah. Great.
Yeah.
Great.
That's a big perk. Yeah, you're right. Good.
Well, I think Woody probably has a bunch of info here because they were by coastal for a while with Sophie.
With the kids.
So let's see what his tips are. Hey, Woody, what's going on?
What's up, Woody?
Hey, guys.
How you doing?
How's it going?
Great. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Thanks for joining us. Greg and I were just chatting about flying with babies. Greg just came back from a trip. I'm scared because I'm hopefully going one in April. And I know you and Helena were bi-coastal for a while, so you probably have a lot of experience with this. Any tips on flying with babies and kids?
Oh, I mean, depends how old your kid is. But now, you know, Sophie's almost three. We have an iPad, and it's funny because, you know, before I had kids, I'd like go to a restaurant and see a family and their kid would be on an iPad. And I was like a little judgy, I will admit. But now, I fully embrace the iPad. Sophie's been I know this is hard to believe, but I mean, over 75 flights at this point.
Wow. She's got more miles than I do.
Way more.
No, I mean, it's kidding. Amazing, right? Because between, the bi-coastal piece, Helena has much of her family is in Norway. So we would go visit her family in Norway. And then she has family in North Carolina and I have family in Massachusetts. So we kind of, flew around all for quite a while for a minute. But the iPad has been huge. And
how old was Sophie on her first flight?
That's a good question. She was a couple months when we went to Norway for the first time.
Wow. I've heard. So I just traveled with my son. He's about 10 months old. So he's like right at that stage where he's super mobile and super squirmy. And similar to you, Woody, I'm always that guy. Like I see these kids on planes with iPads. I'm like, what the hell are these parents doing? Like, don't they know like kids shouldn't be on screens? That's what everyone tells me. I wish I had shown my son the iPad beforehand. All he did when I showed him the iPad, I tried. I even downloaded Sesame Street. He's never watched Sesame Street. I just assumed like that was the thing to show him. He just tried eating the iPad the entire time. Like it did not work. So literally last week, I said to my wife, I was like, I think we got to get them to like learn how to like watch things now. Like, how are we supposed to do that? Because honestly, my flight experience was, it was rough. It was a little rough, to be honest.
I think on both your judginess, it's what's the saying? Like, everybody's their best parent before they have kids.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. That's so funny. It was so like, I wasn't like curious enough to see what actually games were or just content were on these things. I was just had this mindset of, a kid shouldn't be behind a screen, for so many hours. But actually, these are really educational games. She can speak really well for her age. I mean, she can add. She knows numbers. I mean, a lot of this, I think, is actually attributed to her experience with the iPad. So
yeah, I mean, one thing that was interesting is like my wife and I's like how we kind of balanced each other on the flight. So, and I know, obviously Woody, you and Helena, work with one another and seem to complement each other incredibly well. You being a third generation winemaker, which is just incredible. Helena coming from tech and branding. Do you guys have that same balance when it comes to parenting as well?
Yeah. So Helena and I are definitely very complementary on like so many different aspects of our life. I mean, we are the perfect co-founders for House, with my production background and her brand background. Regardless of being married, we would be perfect co-founders. And then when it comes to raising Sophie, then it's, I don't know if it's like the same division of focus, but, it's really complementary and we both, share the responsibilities. And it's not like this sort of traditional household where like she cooks and, I'm out like building stuff or whatever. It's day to day, it's shared. And
it's not Little House on the Prairie. I see on Instagram, you guys got a lot going on. You building chicken coops and running through the fields, the vineyard and the grapes. I mean, you guys also dealt with something crazy this summer with the wildfires. How did you even explain to Sophie that right, there's a fire going on that might burn down our house and everything we have? Was that a conversation you guys had with Sophie?
Yeah, we haven't really had that explicit conversation with her yet. I mean, she comprehends smoke. Like she'll see fog even sometimes and say, it's smoky. She doesn't understand the gravity of like what we went through this last year, but she knows that something's up, right? And it's what's scary is that this has happened now the last 5 years in a row. And
wow.
And I hate to think it, but it's probably something that she's going to have to deal with. She's the fourth generation on our ranch. And,
yep.
you know, hopefully there's many more generations after her. And unfortunately, it sort of goes with the territory in California now.
Yeah.
Much of other places in the world too.
So if she's fourth generation, you're a third generation winemaker, but House is an aperitif brand. Like, how did you get into aperitifs?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of a long journey. I've always been someone who's sort of thought like out of the box. And I was always in a sort of counterculture and underground music. I was never really into like sort of mainstream systems. So that's sort of like fundamentally who I am. But I had an opportunity to live in Berlin over a decade ago. I spent about 6 months going back and forth from New York and Berlin. And then after that sort of 6 month period, I stayed there for a year. And I learned there that there is this different drinking culture. You know, in New York, it was like, at least at that age and sort of my mid 20s, it was really sort of like high intensity. So you went out and it was like an insane party sort of vibe. And in Berlin, obviously, there's a huge part of Berlin culture like that. But my experience was more about going to like a dark bar with a couple friends and we drink aperitifs all night. You know, we leave the house at midnight, come back when the sun's coming up. But it was a period where it was more about connecting with people and, you know, having really interesting conversations. And it was something I learned pretty quickly. Like, I wanted to remember these conversations with like incredible artists that I was hanging out with, or these incredible academics or whoever it was in whatever particular night. And I just love that sort of, it was this aperitif like drinking culture that we embraced. And when I moved back to the States, and kind of one thing led to another, and I eventually was making my own wine, I found that it was a great opportunity to like start making my own aperitifs. And because I wanted to share that culture with people in the States.
So you kind of came back. What was that moment, obviously being a winemaker for so long, that you're like, okay, now like I'm going to do this. And like, this is kind of what I want to bring to market. How did that all end up coming together?
Yeah, it was. So the aha moment for me to want to start making aperitifs was, it was really something that came from these just wonderful memories that I had in Berlin. It wasn't like a super like well thought out business plan. You know, it wasn't something that I had these like this huge sort of like marketing vision. It was really just knowing that I had experienced something special and I wanted to show more people that sort of way of living. And, you know, I just so happened to live in Sonoma County. I had access to a bunch of grapes and we ended up making a bunch of a base wine that I had access to that made more sense for me at the time to actually start playing around with some aperitifs with that base wine as opposed to sell it or bottle it or whatever. And then we also living on ranches and a lot of my friends were living on these big ag properties. I had access to this really super high quality botanicals. And, you know, it was a very slow process though. The R&D took a couple years before we came up with something that we really liked. And then we went about it really traditionally. You know, I went with a cool kid distributor that, you know, all the sort of top cocktail bars and best restaurants, they would work with this distributor with, you know, because they had all the artisanal spirits and other sort of aperitifs and stuff.
And how did that like just eventually evolve into House?
So it didn't technically evolve in House. It was actually, it was a different business. It was different recipes. It was actually a part of the wine business that I was running. And when we came up with the idea for House, we knew it should really be something entirely different. And we really wanted to start from scratch and, you know, even create new recipes and do something totally new. And also do something that was both Helena and mine, where, you know, what I was doing before was really sort of my thing. And, you know, it was important that we, you know, sort of create this brand and this vision together rather than Helena kind of coming in and like, then we sort of evolve the pre-existing piece with her. Yeah. So when we really started getting into House and really seeing the vision and seeing like what it could become, we both, you know, closed down our businesses. You know, I had a wine business that was very much a lifestyle business probably forever where, you know, we would make enough money to live a nice lifestyle and eat good food and have really, you know, yeah. You know, this sort of like romantic lifestyle that you see in like some of these wine movies, which is like totally not totally true. And she, you know, she had a very successful production business in Silicon Valley. And it's funny. It's like one of these, it's like this moment in our life where we just knew we had to give it a shot. But if we were going to do it, we had to go all in. Like we couldn't sort of hedge our bets by keeping our other businesses alive, because we knew if we did that, we wouldn't give our all to house. And we knew, one, that we had this incredible idea. And two, you know, when you bring on investment capital, there's also like an obligation to take it really seriously. So
yeah.
And totally.
So, and like you said before, you and Helena are the, were the perfect co-founders, even if you weren't married, but you are married. Yeah. And I think Helena had told me once that you guys met on OkCupid and you were a 96% match on OkCupid. So clearly the algorithms knew too that you guys were perfect match in some way. But how did that all go down? Did you agree for, with OkCupid from the start that there was 96% match? Or?
Yeah, no. So Helena and I met in 2012 on OkCupid.com. So this was before Tinder. This was before swiping. So you actually like put a lot of time and effort into a profile. You know, there are these sort of values-based questions that you answer on the app. And that's what creates, you know, this sort of like percentage match. And yeah, I mean, our first date was epic. It was the best date I've ever had. You know, we started out at a dive bar in sort of like a non-trendy neighborhood in San Francisco. And then next door is a Chinese restaurant that my family's been going to for 30 years. And so we had some food there. And then we got some 40s and went to the park and watched YouTube videos.
40s. What type of 40s?
Mickey's. Yeah.
Wow. Classic. Amazing.
Yes, quick. I know.
Michael's more of an old English guy himself.
Yeah, I don't know if you've gone back to a 40 recently, but they have not gotten better. Yeah, and then we went to another dive bar sort of in her neighborhood, a bar that I've been going to for 20 years almost now, and which is now closed, called Summer Place in Knob Hill. But it was just this awesome first date, and we even shook hands that night and said, look, like, I don't know in what facet you'll be in my life, but we're going to be friends forever.
That's awesome.
And, you know, we kind of circled each other for years, you know, so I guess I should step back. That first date happened. I think a day or two later, she found out that she got this great job opportunity in New York. So, you know, we sort of plan to have the second date, and she tells me like, look, you got to know I'm moving to New York. And the thing is, at the time, that was like perfect for me. If we didn't have something like that at that stage, to sort of like break out our relationship, you know, kind of let us take it really seriously a couple years later, I don't think either of us were like really in the right place then to, you know, really pursue something long-term. Yeah. And so, yeah, we dated for the month before she left for New York, maintained like a really close friendship. And a couple years ago, I came back to her and was like, okay, I'm ready to really do something, take this really seriously if you're open to it. And sort of one thing led to another, and we have a kid and a business. And
that's amazing. I mean, you guys were 96% compatible. I think if you would have guessed, me and my wife were probably like 60 to 70% compatible at the start. So, I mean, you guys had a lot of upside from there. People were just guessing every now and then if we were going
to
work.
Well, if you ever listen to the Dan Savage, the Savage Lovecast podcast, he always says, no one ever finds the one, but you round up to one. So, and some people round up from 96% and some people round up from 60%.
Right, or 70. Like, it's fine.
And that's okay. And that's love.
Exactly. I mean, I'm already telling my kid, you know, C's get degrees in the end of the day. So it's okay.
So Woody, I think before we move to a fun little game with you, you guys do own an alcohol brand. Do you guys ever talk, I know it's early, but do you guys ever have like these hypothetical conversations about alcohol and kids and Sophie and like, or I don't even with you, like you grew up in a wine family, like was drinking just like normal? Was alcohol normal? Like how did that get worked into parenting and your everyday life?
Absolutely. I mean, my first glass of wine, I was, you know, or not full glass, but my, you know, my first sort of like small pour at the table, I was probably 8 years old. Yeah. I mean, it's one of these things where I've had a relationship with alcohol my whole life. And I think I've, you know, for the most part had a healthier relationship than like most people who are kind of like thrown into college and all of a sudden you can get drunk all the time. You know, don't get me wrong. I have spent my considerable amount of my life in, you know, dark bars throughout the world, but
drinking 40s,
40s in parks too. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's something that I think it's like kind of like all things. I think it's better just sort of spoken about, having like transparent conversations with the people around you, as opposed to like shunning it until all of a sudden one day it's like legal for you to go out and do it. You know, it's,
yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's definitely something with Sophie, obviously she's three, so it's not like a,
you're not spiking her milk.
Yeah. We haven't had the conversation yet, but you know, I think it's going to be something that we'll probably offer her glasses of wine when she's in high school and stuff, just so she can like, not only feel comfortable around it and like learn how to engage with it, but also it's something that it's so ingrained in our family culture. I want her to understand like what we do and to understand also the process of, you know, we live on this vineyard, this, you know, where we grow 68 acres of grapes. Like I want her to have she's going to have a deep connection with the land regardless because she's been raised on the property. But, you know, I was too. And the fact that I have had the opportunity to like take grapes that I grew and make that into wine, it's a really sort of special, it's a deeply like, it's hard to even explain. It's almost like a spiritual experience. It's a way where like you human beings don't really connect with land like they used to because we're all urban dwellers now for the most part. It's like 99% of the world is living in urban centers now or somewhere close to that statistic. And just having this opportunity to be so connected to this property that's gone through many generations of my family now, I really want that for Sophie. And I do think being able to, you know, have a glass of wine from grapes that are made on that ranch, like just strengthens and deepens that connection.
Yeah,
totally.
Well, it's a good segue.
Yeah, that, I was going to say for sure.
We both have beers in front of us because where we're located, that's our only choice. But do you have a drink in front of you?
I do.
What's your drink of choice today?
A 40.
I'm drinking I know I should be plugging house, but I'm actually drinking a 40. I'm sorry. A Mickey's.
Love it.
Awesome. Well, we thought we'd bring back an old school game and play a little game of Never Have I Ever, Dad Edition. So things that we've never done as dads that maybe others have, and we'll go around. Everybody puts up five fingers. If it's something you've done, you got to put a finger down and drink. First person to be out of fingers wins or loses, however you look at it. You want to give us the first one, Woody?
Okay. Never have I ever had one too many at a toddler birthday party.
My hands are still...
Both our kids were born in COVID, so birthday parties, we're all five fingers up.
That's
all
right, good.
I'll go next. Never have I ever been pooped on.
I mean, that's definitely a finger down for me.
Yeah, it's
drink.
Almost, yeah. It does get better, though. You know, it does get
better. That's what they say. Yeah. I hope so. I mean, one of my friend's kids being potty trained right now, and it's dark days for him.
Oh, I mean, it is amazing that poop just... shows up everywhere, you
know? Of course. Never have I ever gave my kid a sip of wine yet.
Didn't get any.
Damn.
Sounds like Woody's waiting till at least a few more years.
Yeah.
All right, Woody, you got another one?
Never have I ever inadvertently taught my child a bad word.
I mean, I'm going to put a finger down because I don't have a filter and there's no doubt one of those words is coming soon.
Yeah.
Oh man. Sophie's like quieted down a little bit, but there was a time where like whenever anything where like most kids would say like, oh no, Sophie would go, oh shit.
My son is similar to Michael, has not said anything, has not really said a word yet. He's almost 10 months, maybe dada, mama occasionally, but he's going to just curse all day.
How old are your kids?
Mine is almost 10 months.
And Gemma turned a year yesterday and her favorite word is no, no, no with a finger wag. Uh-oh. Just like Dikembe Mutombo finger wag.
Oh, that's awesome.
Cool. I'll get the next one in there. And this one is not out of choice. I want to preface this. This is because we co-slept for a while and COVID, we never forced the bottle because she didn't want it. But never have I ever done a night feed.
Definitely, unfortunately. Tons.
I'm just drinking for fun at this point.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of...
Yeah.
That's the irony of all drinking games. So never have I ever fed my kid blueberries.
She likes blueberries.
Dude, my kid.
I personally, like, I have like a slight aversion to blueberries. So I don't think I
You're
literally
just trying
ever
to keep
will.
Away from him forever.
Yeah. I mean, I'm trying, but it's like, it's already not working.
Okay. Never have I ever given my kid the iPad and made her mac and cheese while she woke, like, this is in the morning.
Well, I think all of yours are truths that you're just lying at this point. Okay.
Okay.
I've given screens because, and the other night we actually made homemade chicken nuggets instead of buying frozen ones. We just made them ourselves. Highly recommend. There's a great recipe on the internet for,
What was the time? The time?
It doesn't take that long to make, actually. But there's a great recipe online for like copycat chicken McNuggets.
Yeah. The kids go crazy for them.
Highly recommend. I go crazy for them.
Woody, was it regular mac and cheese, like homemade, or like easy mac, like shove it in the microwave?
Oh, no. Well, we actually are a microwave-free home.
Ooh. Same.
But we just like go to Costco and get the like Annie's organic like mega packet, and we go through that packet like in 4 days.
It's, all right, I'll just make it easy on you. Never have I ever stuck my kids' food in the microwave.
now we're
you guys are there. You go.
All right, I have one more. Never have I ever taken a rectal temperature.
Oh, I mean, I'm just gonna close all my fingers for how many times I've done it at this point.
You're the winner, loser, Greg.
Yeah, I'm the winner, loser.
All right, cheers to you, Greg.
Cheers.
That is, it's wild, right? The things that you become comfortable with.
Totally.
Like, yeah, dirty.
I mean, kids' food, right? Like, half of parenting is reliving your childhood a little bit. And I think food is a big part of that, mm-hmm. especially for maybe this is just me. But yeah. The food, you know, I tweeted the other day that 50% of parenting is finishing your kid's string cheese. And like, we feed Gemma whatever we're eating. But for some reason recently, like the chicken nuggets, we're like drawn to these things that we ate as kids. And I don't, in the same way we were talking earlier about being judgy about the iPad at the restaurant or on the plane, whatever. We were probably also judgy about kid food, right? Like, we're not going to feed our kid, you know, like stereotypical kid food. She'll eat whatever we're eating. But recently we've been drawn to the stuff that we ate as kids.
Yeah.
I think partially because we just want her to experience it, not because like we're not making something different for her, because we chose to eat those chicken nuggets we made with her.
Right. But you're just living out the fact that, hey,
yeah, kids, it's like giving us an opportunity.
Kids should love
again.
Chicken fingers or chicken nuggets.
Yeah.
Excuse me. So interesting. I cannot wait for Jay to start eating like bigger. Like, he had a piece of bread the other. So this morning, piece of bread. And I was like, that looks pretty good. I think I'm just going to rip off some for myself too. So like, it's starting to get to my dog got to him first with the food. Now I'm getting to his food. So hopefully he's got food left for him, honestly.
Yeah. We all got dogs too. How does your dog do with Sophie? Or your dogs, right?
Yeah, we have two dogs. We have here, this is this pop. That is a bottle of House.
Oh, there you go.
I've stepped it up from.
What flavor?
Bitter clove.
Classic.
Yeah, I think that was the first one I got.
Same.
And then I have the citrus one.
I bought the rosé one.
Oh, nice.
Over the summer.
I think I have that one too. I think I have four now, because Ben Zeises, who's an investor of both of ours, just sent me passion fruit one. Peach passion fruit, is that right?
Yeah, peach passion fruit. That was, so Helena loves tiki drinks. So for Mother's Day last year, I like made her a House tiki drink. And the team happened to be out, or a bunch of the team happened to be out and tasted it. And everyone loved it. So we thought, okay, we'll launch it as a new flavor. And we launched it actually on Helena's birthday.
Oh, that's awesome. That's awesome. So maybe we could close the show up here, Woody, with like your favorite cocktail recipe with House.
Hmm. So I'm stuck between two flavors currently. It always changes. So bitter clove, second flavor that we created, you know, it's sort of a deconstruction of Amaro. So it's like a lot of ingredients that you'd find in an Amaro, but it's in a way more palatable, sort of sessionable approach or format rather. So I love bitter clove because you can just sort of like sip on it like you'd sip on a whiskey, sort of get sort of that same sort of warmth experience. But right now, where you guys are like living through a snowstorm in New York, if this were not COVID time, one of my favorite things to do in the whole world is to go like in a snowstorm, find a hotel that has a fireplace and sip a cocktail. So, you know, like the Bowery Hotel, you know, I know that their couch area by the fire is like only for guests, but usually you can sort of like talk your way in. If it's not busy, you can kind of talk your way into saying, hey, I'm only going to have one drink, you know, and the guest or the host will let you through. So that inspired Spiced Cherry, which is our latest flavor, which is basically like a Manhattan inspired cocktail, but just in a sort of low ABV house format. So
that's awesome. So are you typically drinking that just like on the rocks or straight? Mixed. Are you adding any bourbon or whiskey into that?
So with that one, like I was actually just drinking it yesterday with a friend, a socially distanced friend, I should say. And I do like a little splash, like a bar spoon splash of rye. I think like Whistle Pig 10-year rye is like a perfect combo with our Spiced Cherry. And we actually made the flavor while we were drinking that. And it's like this sort of, the flavors just work really well together, but you only need a little bit. A little bit of spirit goes a long way. And that's actually kind of sort of the same with all of our house flavors. A little bit of spirit goes a long way with all of them.
That's awesome. Well, thank you for giving us and all our listeners a little cocktail tip. And thanks for taking the time to chat with us today.
Yeah, thanks for having me, you guys. And I look forward to being able to see you guys again in person sometime.
Totally.
All right.
Thanks for tuning into the Dad Pod. Let us know who you want to hear on the pod next by DMing us on Instagram at Lalo, that's L-A-L-O, or emailing us at dadpod@meetlalo.com. We'll catch you next week with a brand new episode.